From Pacifico Radio, this is Democracy Now!
Those people who would decide that they're going to take the law into their own hands in different ways,
right.
then we have an obligation to suppress that. Only to suppress it. You'll notice that we're not still up there beating them.
IMF, what do you say?
How many kids you killed today?
IMF,
what do you say?
We blocked off, successfully blocked off, and kept delegates from going into down three entrances into Lafayette.
Mobilization for social justice. Thousands paralyzed the nation's capital, calling for the closing of the World Bank and the IMF. All that and more coming up on Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Washington has braced for another day of anti-corporate globalization protests outside the IMF and the World Bank. Before we move on with the show to bring you the events of the last few days where thousands paralyzed Washington, D.C., we go to the streets of the nation's capital with Zach Wolf, who is a legal observer standing on K Street. But this is a different K Street than we're used to. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Zach Wolf.
Thank you. Actually, a correction. I'm no longer standing on K Street because I've been ordered to leave. There's some people being arrested. I explained that I worked with legal counsel for them, and I asked where they were being taken, and all he would say over and over again was, get away, get away.
Where are you?
So they're being denied legal counsel as well.
Where are you?
I'm on K Street moving towards 17th.
And can you tell us what the scene is? How many people are there? What are they calling for? How close are you to the World Bank?
Well, we're a few blocks away from the World Bank now. There were probably a few hundred people marching along here. We've been marching for most of the morning, and everything was fine. And there were no police lines set up. And then suddenly a police line went up, and it was impossible for people to leave the corner. Some people on two of the corners got arrested, presumably for being behind a police line, but the police line didn't go up until they were trapped behind four police lines. Those of us who were lucky enough to be on the west side, or excuse me, on the east side of 18th Street are being allowed to disperse.
We're talking to Zach Wolf on a cell phone, who's in downtown Washington, D.C. on the second day of massive protests. Yesterday to stop the meeting of the International Monetary Fund, today to stop the meeting of the World Bank. Zach, you've been watching these protests over the last few days. What have you observed, if you can keep talking as you're being moved?
Right. The most troubling thing is really just the level of violence and force that the police have been using. I experienced tear gas this morning for people who were completely peaceful. I saw folks yesterday getting yanked up off the ground who were just sitting there. They weren't chained to anything. They weren't destroying any property. They were just sitting in the road singing and chanting. And the police came up and grabbed them and either threw them to the ground, or if they managed to maintain their balance, another police officer hit them with his baton until they hit the ground. Two people at least had to be taken away in an ambulance. One was very severe. There was blood all over the pavement. It was just the most horrible thing I'd ever seen.
And this was when?
This was yesterday at about noon.
We also understand that an AP reporter was clubbed by police. Is that right?
That's who I saw, right.
That is the reporter.
Right. The police are just indiscriminately grabbing people and hitting people. There's no concern for whether or not the person is doing anything that they shouldn't be. You know, here's someone who was just standing there trying to get a picture. He obviously wasn't engaging in violence, and they responded very violently against him.
Have the protesters today succeeded in stopping people who are trying to get into the World Bank meeting?
I'm not really sure that they were even trying to today. They didn't start as early as they did yesterday. I think really this whole thing is about trying to get their message across. You know, folks are carrying banners and they're chanting slogans and trying to get people to understand that there has been no violence whatsoever here except by the police, that this has been a completely nonviolent demonstration.
Zach Wolf, I should tell our listeners, rest assured, we're going to be dealing with the issues of what brought people to Washington for this entire program. We go to the streets first because that's what's happening now as we speak with Zach Wolf, a legal observer. I understand that just before these protests began this weekend, that the police raided the Convergence Center. Can you explain what that is and what they did?
Well, they had the fire department come through first, supposedly for a fire inspection, and they didn't like, I believe the basis was they didn't like the way some of the paint was being used for cooking. So at that point, they called in the police, and the police seized control of the facility altogether. In that facility were puppets and banners and literature, including literature that was explaining the nonviolence guidelines and instructing people not to engage in violence. There were all kinds of medical supplies, which unfortunately have been really needed over the past couple of days. And those were all taken by the police or seized within the building. And folks were not allowed to get it. Late in the afternoon, they were able to take out about half the puppets. We went to court, filed a complaint with a U.S. district judge, and had a court hearing scheduled for yesterday morning. As soon as the BC government learned of this, they said that they wanted to settle with us and that they would let us in at 7 o'clock to get all that stuff out. So we canceled our hearing, and then they only let us remove a few things.
Zach Wolf, we have to go. I want to thank you for being with us. We will call you back to touch base through the show to see what is happening as the protesters remain in the streets. Zach Wolf, a legal observer for the Mobilization for Social Justice, where thousands paralyzed the streets of Washington, D.C. yesterday, as well as today, police in preparation for these protests against the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund.
This is what democracy sounds like. 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 This is what democracy sounds like.
They just pushed down a female protester onto the ground. They're pushing her. They're hitting her. They're hitting her. Pushing into the street. They're pushing into the street with a baton. What's the badge number? Get the badge number.
Those people who would decide that they're going to take the law into their own hands in different ways,
right.
Then we have an obligation to suppress that. Only to suppress it. You'll notice that we're not still up there beating them.
IMF, what do you say?
How many kids did you kill today?
IMF,
what do you say?
How many kids did you kill today?
IMF,
what do you say?
How many kids did you kill today?
We blocked off, successfully blocked off, and kept delegates from going into down three entrances into Lafayette Park.
One cluster of the activists with the Mobilization for Global Justice have taken control of the intersection peacefully by locking themselves together.
I'm here because I passionately believe that global capitalism is destroying our planet and it's destroying communities.
People of the South, kick the World Bank out! People of the South, kick the World Bank out! People of the South, kick the World Bank out!
The sounds of the Mobilization for Social Justice this weekend, brought to you by the Independent Media Center and all the folks who are there. We'll be talking about those who produce this segment and what this new phenomenon is, the IMC, that is here in Washington, D.C., was set up in Seattle for the protests against the World Trade Organization, and actually began a few years ago at the Democratic Convention, and where it's headed in the next few months to Philadelphia for the Republican Convention and to Los Angeles for the Democratic Convention. You're listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman in Washington, D.C., in Pacifica Radio's Washington studios of WPFW, as we came to the nation's capital for this massive protest this weekend that continues today with attempts to block off the World Bank and the IMF. Actually, the police have done that, but protesters are outside, as we just heard from the legal observer, Zach Wolf. But we don't just want to deal with the clashes between police and protesters, but the underlying issue of why these protesters, estimates range between 10 and 20,000, came to Washington, D.C. over this past week. The protests actually began about 2 weeks ago with a mobilization against the School of the Americas at Fort Benning, and then the activities increased until last weekend on Sunday, when there was a major rally against debt the debt that supposedly the Western world says the third world owes to the West, and then activities through the week leading to this last day's events. To begin today's program, we're joined by Dennis Brutus. He is one of the leaders of the movement to fight the debt. He is a former political prisoner in South Africa. He was on Robben's Island with Nelson Mandela. He is a world-renowned poet, and now with Jubilee 2000. We welcome you to Democracy Now!
Thank you, Amy. Glad to be with you.
Well, this last week of your life, what has it been like for you? I've seen you for years at 50 Years is Enough campaign events, or for a few years, where a couple hundred people come to educate themselves about these abstract international issues. But this is a whole new level, what people are calling a revolution.
Well, certainly there's so much more passion, so much more determination. The word mobilization and the whole response to the notion of a globalizing process, this corporate globalization that we are resisting. And what's astonishing, of course, is that it involves billions, not just millions, because all over Asia, Africa, Latin America, people are organizing, whether it's against the debt issue or the other programs of the World Bank and the IMF, such as what are called SAPs or structural adjustment programs. But there is, for one, a kind of determination which is coupled also with an understanding that what's happening in our time is this globalizing process where the corporations are trying to take over the world and dictate an agenda in which profits are always more important than people. You can see people on the streets yelling, and they're saying, whose streets? Our streets, because they're asserting this is everybody's world. It's not just the world that the corporations can control. And of course the police, unfortunately, and later on no doubt the military, will be there in defense of the corporations, functioning in their defense. And that's why we see thousands right up at the barricades, outside the World Bank, outside the IMF yesterday. We marched through the streets of Washington, we were on the ellipse, you know, people from Ecuador, Nicaragua, from Zimbabwe, Zambia, across the world, all united. Because we need a globalized resistance to a globalized oppression.
Coming up in our last segment, we're going to be talking with some musicians from a group called Seize the Day, who sang at yesterday's rally. But they're more than musicians who sing songs about biotechnology and Monsanto and other issues. They themselves are activists who've been arrested as they pull up crops that have been put into test sites that were biotechnologically engineered, and they've gone to court. And they're part of a major movement in Europe that's been fighting biotechnology. By the same token, on this issue of debt and this issue of understanding what the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank does abroad, the U.S. has been, in terms of the U.S. population, much less aware, perhaps because they're not the, quote, beneficiaries of these programs. But that's what's changed now. This is happening on the streets of the U.S., and with there's a lot of international presence, but there are thousands of U.S. citizens who are taking up this call.
Oh, very much so. Of course, you can't really blame people if they don't know. Because, for instance, in Seattle, people were shocked to discover that the WTO existed. And there were people saying, what is the WTO, World Trade Organization, writing an agenda for the whole world? So people in the United States are beginning to understand, and I think even more significantly, they're beginning to ally with the people in the third world, in other parts of the world.
I want to talk about what happened Saturday, because that's part of this joining of the movement from the U.S. to Europe, to Africa, to Asia and Latin America. 700 people got arrested on Saturday. They were mainly young people, and we're going to hear some of their voices tomorrow. They were marching thinking that they were just doing a preliminary march into Sunday. They were marching against the prison industrial complex in this country, also calling for the fair trial of and support for Mumia Abu-Jamal. They did not think they were doing anything illegal, but the police moved in set up certain wedges, and suddenly they were all under arrest. To show the youth of this crowd, a number of them had to be put into another facility because they were minors. But they see the prison industrial complex in this country, kept repeating that number, 2 million people in prison, highest per capita population in prison of anywhere in the world, as a reflection of or a parallel to what the World Bank and the IMF does in other countries, and that's marginalize the poorest of the society.
Because you now have prisoners working in the way that you would normally have people in a shoe factory or a T-shirt factory or whatever. But in fact, you can reduce the cost of production, of course, if you can take that job into the prisons and use prison labor instead of regular labor in industry. But of course, this is really parallel with what we're experiencing in Africa, in Asia, countries like Indonesia, Malaysia, and elsewhere, where the labor is not only cheap labor, and very often it's women and children working long hours, but in fact, curiously, the United States government has trade publications encouraging industry in the U.S. to move into these countries so they can get the same work done more cheaply.
Talk about your homeland, South Africa. Dennis Brutus, poet, freedom fighter in South Africa, again imprisoned at Robben Island, now here in the United States. Why the debt is so significant in Southern Africa?
Right, and of course, we've had a very specific experience because apartheid was all about using cheap labor, whether it was in the gold mines, the diamond mines, the factories, Ford, GM, the other corporations that were in there. So now we have a new kind of apartheid, and they're talking now of a global apartheid where the world is divided into rich and poor, more billionaires on the one hand, more beggars on the other hand. So in South Africa, we had a marvelously clear and, in fact, very honest declaration. They were interested in cheap labor, and the factories would come in because they could use cheap labor. That process is now becoming globalized. In the conference in Havana, now where the group of 77 are meeting, they've actually used the term. We are now experiencing global apartheid.
In your country, South Africa, some have criticized the leadership, saying that they are accepting the debt, not fighting it.
I wish we had time to go into more detail, but as you know, other countries had what was called an SAP, Structural Adjustment Program, imposed on them by the World Bank. South Africa absurdly developed its own SAP under Trevor Manuel and people like that, and went to the World Bank offering themselves like lambs going to the slaughter. And of course, what it has meant is that debt is being paid to the World Bank at the time when schools and hospitals, even houses, are not being built. But the priority is to please the World Bank, external and internal debt, and the people are suffering. So many of us are deeply disappointed to see that South Africa, that emerged out of that terrible system under which I was imprisoned with thousands of others, we come out of South African local apartheid, and now we're entering into global apartheid.
We just have a minute, but where do you see this movement that is clearly growing by, to say the least, leaps and bounds? Where do you see it going? Do you see that African countries, for example, will be able to wipe out their debt simply by saying, we've paid our debt in other ways?
I think that's part of the process. We have to seize the day. I think we've got the momentum in Seattle. We're now developing it in Washington. We'll be doing it at the time of the G7 in July. We'll be doing it when the UN meets in the General Assembly in New York in September. So there's this building momentum, but it's more than Africa. It's literally a global movement because it's Asia, it's Latin America, it's the Caribbean. And I think we can actually come up with a whole new world framework in which people will be more important than profits.
Dennis Brutus, South African poet living here in the United States. If people want to get in touch with Jubilee 2000, the group with which you work, where can they call or go on the web?
Right. Well, we have an office right here in Washington of what we call the 50 Years is Enough movement, which is connected with the Mobilization for Global Justice. The address is 1247 East Street, Southeast, and that's the office. I'm not sure I have a phone number.
Well, we will put the phone number on our website at www.democracynow.org or pacifica.org, as we will put the website as well, which is www.50years.org. Dennis Brutus, thank you for being with us. When we come back, we'll be joined by the founders of a remarkable movement in this country called the Independent Media Center. It's moving from city to city, and it's taking on the corporate media and giving a different look at these uprisings against corporate power. Stay with us.
I've been thinking about how to talk about tea. I've been thinking about how to talk about tea. I've been wondering if I could sing about the reed. Trying to find a way to talk about greed. Greed is a poison rising in this land. The soul of the people twisted in its command. It moves like a virus, seeking out everyone. Greed never stops, it's working, never ever done. A creeping, choking, killing, invading everywhere. There is really no escaping greed's sneaky snare. I've been thinking about how to talk about greed. I've been thinking about how to talk about greed. I've been wondering if I could sing about greed. Trying to find a way to talk about greed. Not partial.
You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!, the exception to the rulers. I'm Amy Goodman.
We're the billionaires for Bush or Gore. Doesn't really matter. We've bought them both.
We believe that economic inequality is not growing fast enough, and that's why we say more bank, less world, more bank, less world, more bank, less world.
World Bank is not too good for the farmers. Farmers are the poorest people in all the, over the world, and the land is, people borrow, forget a little bit of money, and they are taking it away from them.
There was a bus of police in riot gear that pulled up to one of the intersections that was barricaded, and police jumped out in full riot gear with their batons raised. They did not say one word to one protester. They did not ask anyone to clear the area. They just charged at people and began swinging their batons and hitting people. They hit one gentleman in the face, broke his nose. They hit another woman and pushed her over people. There was not a word said by the police to protesters. No one asked to clear the area. No one under arrest. Nothing. They just started beating people with their batons.
Sitting in the middle of an intersection getting ready to block whoever may come through here. There's many protesters sitting down here. It appears that we'll be tear gassed. Who knows, maybe possible arrest. Everyone's staying calm. Everyone's been instructed to go to the sides for medics. Everyone, unity is very strong, stronger than ever, and there's no way they're going to defeat us.
I'm here with Community Television of Santa Cruz County, just covering it for a show called Voices from the Village, as well as just shooting some of my own footage to combine with WTO footage to, you know, document this, to bear witness, to document what's going on and the injustices that are happening here.
Singrauli is a city in India where the World Bank is sponsored, paid for a power plant that's putting toxic ash throughout those neighborhoods. It's yet another project that the World Bank has funded.
I'm interviewing an IMF official. How do you expect me to write a book about the IMF if I don't interview people who are involved in running the IMF? I have an appointment with him now.
Sorry.
Okay, so you consider blocking a legitimate journalist with the Washington Post?
No one goes in and no one goes out.
Okay. Well, just so you understand what you're doing, I'm going write a book about the IMF.
Someone might question the legitimacy of Washington Post Press anyway, as corporate owned.
The stupidity of your statement is reflected in the stupidity of what we're saying.
some of the sounds of the street over the last 2 days. That last scene taking place at a blockade at I Street and 19th yesterday. No, that wasn't police stopping the Washington Post reporter. It was the protesters who were saying no one in, no one out. They were not allowing in the corporate media to go to the World Bank and IMF meetings, and they were not allowing in the finance ministers or other representatives who were trying to make it to that meeting. These are the sounds of thousands of people who were out in the street yesterday on the front line and also on the ellipse between the Washington Monument and the White House, listening to speaker after speaker throughout the day call for either the closing of the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund or its radical reform. We want to thank Maria Carrion, who produced that last audio medley, and also at the top of the show, the sound we heard was produced by the International Media Center, Craig Heimson, Chris Rottler, Amashan Toft, and Jade Paget Seeksons. Yes, the International Media Center. I went there last night as we spent time there in Seattle as well. What is this remarkable phenomenon that has grown up? We're joined right now by two of its founders, Jeff Perlstein and Sherry Herndon. We welcome you to Democracy Now!
Thank you, Amy.
Great to be here.
Well, let's start from the beginning. Last night was a press conference at 8 o'clock in the evening, bringing us footage that we don't see in the mainstream media of what was happening. Some of it was the cracking of heads with police batons, that kind of brutality, as opposed to what we usually see in the media, though I do think the message is still getting out of the protesters, and that is broken glass, certainly in Seattle. Not as much here, as people question, well, which is the violence that the world cares about more? But Jeff Perlstein, tell us how this got started.
Yeah, Amy, back in last year in Seattle, as we saw the organizing for the protests and against the WTO, the World Trade Organization, their ministerial talks in late November, there was lots of organizing on the ground for months and months in preparation. And as we began to attend these sessions, recognizing that thousands, tens of thousands of people, bright, articulate, passionate folks are coming from all over the world to speak truth to power, to confront the destructive policies of globalization of capital, we began to recognize that we were in no way willing to entrust those voices to the corporate media, to CNN, CBS. We recognize that their interests are in making a profit and not ensuring that communities are communicating and building a movement for justice. So with that recognition, we set about to provide a people's newsroom for these voices to get heard and to amplify the voices outward so that these stories could be heard all over, to connect up these communities of resistance and struggle, and to be part and parcel of the movement for justice, recognizing that these movements, these struggles have been going on for years and years and years, and this is a new step forward in making sure that there's infrastructure in place for these folks to communicate with each other powerfully.
You started, though, before even Seattle.
Yes, I was involved in a project in 96 with a bunch of other folks at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. It was a collective that formed called Counter Media with a similar objective, related specifically to the Democratic National Convention, but with broader goals of breaking the corporate media blockade, of really empowering and democratizing media, empowering citizens to make sure that they were determining how they are represented, how their stories are getting out, how they're communicating these messages, and how we're really reclaiming parts of ourselves. Earlier we heard the chant, whose streets are streets? And that's really about folks finding their voice, reclaiming their voice, and reclaiming public space. The airwaves are our public space, and increasingly it's being encroached upon by for-profit media outlets and organizations.
You mean it's whose media, our media?
Exactly, exactly. And as we heard in the piece that led in, the folks who are out in the streets today are very savvy about their analysis of the destructive policies of the IMF and World Bank, and are very clear that the corporate media is part and parcel of that problem. So they're unwilling to let corporate media go and do the reporting on these meetings. Interestingly, one of the very first pieces we played today that was from the Independent Media Center was one of our reporters who showed up on the scene. The demonstrators were chanting, "This is what democracy looks like." And when they saw him with a microphone, they changed it, "This is what democracy sounds like." So there's a very broad recognition that the Independent Media Center and independent media in general is absolutely vital and necessary.
Something remarkable happened in Seattle. That is, the Independent Media Center has a website, part and parcel of the media center is its use of the web, indymedia.org. Can you talk about the number of hits that the Indy Media Center website got in Seattle and how it compared to, say, the mainstream media like CNN and their use of the web. Jeff?
Yes, in Seattle, the website indymedia.org, which is actually up and running right now. Folks can check it out. It's an up-to-the-minute newswire with late-breaking stories gathered from over 400 volunteers that are out in the streets, stories that you're not going to see anywhere else, even in other independent media outlets, due to the sheer number of folks we have out there. We received over 1.5 million hits during the week of the WTO ministerial talks. That by far surpassed even CNN's website. Now, the great irony of this all is that even though we were actually accessed by more people around the world than CNN during that week, the IMF's offering of press credentials still chose to deny us any sort of access to the meetings, but of course welcome CNN and other corporate mega giants into the meetings.
Well, I just want to reiterate that point because the IMF and World Bank have made it official. They put out the following message to some reporters saying, "We do not provide press accreditation to public access TV, community radio, nor student or academic publications to attend our meetings." The IMF barring community journalists from DC meetings, and so we did not get press credentials. It really isn't a surprise. It actually is a tribute to community media because it says that the voices that they would bring in, the kind of questions that they would ask of these financial, international financial giants, I suppose are threatening, are too threatening. We're joined, in addition to Jeff Perlstein, by Sherry Herndon. Now, she previously was news director at KCMU-FM in Seattle, Washington, but then went on to found the International Media Center. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Sherry.
Thanks very much.
Why the change?
Well, interestingly enough, I was the news director there for 4 years, and we were doing the kind of news that the Independent Media Center is doing now, and a lot of alternative journalists and independent journalists across the country and the world are doing. But we were doing our job too well, and at KCMU and the University of Washington, the Board of Regents, who are very closely aligned. This is a public institution, mind you. Closely aligned with very strong corporate powers in Washington State. And this isn't all, you know, on the books, but a lot of people feel that there was a pretty direct line between the fact that if we continued the reporting that we were doing, we would not be able to get the kind of corporate support that KCMU was getting through KUOW, which is the NPR partner. So they took off the news hour, and there was a campaign to save the news hour that was in Seattle for quite some time. And so on KCMU, there is no news hour or program. So Jeff and I have been involved with a media democracy movement for quite some time, a number of years, and we're working with community-powered radio, and that was for the legalization of low-powered FM, and also working with the micro-radio movement. And the dream of having a public interest media center, a people's newsroom, has been something that we've been thinking about and wanting because it is an open space that we can actually create that people can be, those voices that we aren't hearing anywhere else will have a place to be heard.
Sherry Herndon, one of the founders of the International Media Center. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! In the next segment of the program, we are going to be joined by two musicians from Britain who are more than musicians. They are major anti-biotechnology activists, and they sang yesterday at the rally of more than 10,000 people on the Ellipse in Washington. Among the people who emceed was Michael Moore, the filmmaker and activist. Today, by the way, at noon in the same place, so behind the White House, Tim Robbins and Susan Sarandon will be there, along with activists like Nigeria anti-corporate globalization activist Aronto Douglas, who has let us know what's going on in the Niger Delta with corporations like Shell and Chevron and Exxon. In fact, he's going back to Nigeria to bury Ken Sarawiwa, though the government won't give his bones back, the activist who fought against Shell and was killed by the military. They are going to bury his, in protest, the things that he was identified with, like his pipe and other personal items, in protest that his bones will not be returned. But we're talking about the International Media Center, the places where people like Aronto Douglas are broadcast, and not just at an event like this when even the corporate media discovers these voices. The International Media Center, being there last night, it was buzzing, to say the least. And there were young people and old people who were training with video and audio, who were working with digital editing, who were putting things up on the web. Explain this new notion of, well, media means mediation, and usually we see the world mediated by a corporate lens, but how you're putting this all together and what you're putting up on this website at breakneck speed every day.
I think that some people refer to it as civic journalism. I think we are taking media to a new level of participation. So it's not just a one-way conversation, but it's a two-way conversation, where and building capacity in communities so people can tell their stories. Because I think that our corporate culture has really disempowered us. And I think that part of the movement, part of the larger global movement, is about empowerment and awakening people to their own dreams and visions and ideas, and a culture that has been telling us what to think and what to buy and how to not analyze the system. That is now that's shifting. And with media and the media democracy movement, people enabling people to get on the website and to write up their own stories and to go into their own communities and to share the stories that they normally would just maybe share around the dinner table, and realizing who their audience is and that that can expand, that is one of the most empowering things that people can experience.
Jeff Perlstein, the media on the web that you're doing, anyone can put anything up?
Yeah, that's one of the innovative aspects of the site, is that there's open posting from off-site. Anyone with an internet connection from around the world can contribute stories as well to the site, so that people who are accessing it can check it out simultaneously. And so, as Sherry said, we are having even more than a two-way dialogue. We're having an infinite-way dialogue, so that this is really a full-on dialogue.
Who's using the information?
Yeah, we're actually getting hits from all over the world. We can check
that
out.
But I mean, are journalists in other countries, are newspapers printing what's being written?
Yes, actually, we've got confirmation that there are community-based organizations and also media outlets all over the world who've picked up the story. For example, we've done a lot of advance work with broad email lists that we've blast faxed and emailed to all sorts of community-based media outlets around the world. Just one example, let me give two quickly. And this also highlights the way that we are linking the different media and linking high and low technology. It's a really innovative use of the site in this way. So for example, we're recognizing that the internet has inherent problems as far as who has access to it. And it plays in some ways into the technology haves, have-nots divide. So for example, what we've done is post-print, which is an old media, right, low technology, to the website, so that community-based organizations in Brussels, in Harare, Lagos, Sao Paulo, Mexico City can download, if they have a connection in their office, the print version, and then make copies, hard copies, to pass out, say, 6,000 in the streets to people who don't need to have internet access. We're rippling outward the impact of the internet. Similarly, during the WTO, we were in contact with Radio Havana. They have an internet connection in their office, which they were able to pull down audio clips and then rebroadcast them to 9 million people on the island, most of whom have never seen a computer or have an internet connection. So it's really amplifying the impact of the different medias by linking them together.
And for us, at these areas where the site is established, where the Independent Media Center is, in Seattle, now in Washington, D.C., then it'll be in Los Angeles and in Philadelphia for the conventions, you've got a hard copy called The Blind Spot, a daily bulletin of underreported anti-IMF World Bank activism. And that blind spot was also in Seattle as well, on the WTO?
Yep.
It was, and actually we're expanding and refining the work that we're doing, because Seattle was our first experiment. We're continuing that in D.C. and innovating as well. So with the blind spot, now we're translating into five different languages. So that's a big step forward to make sure that there's truly broad access internationally.
What about these images that we rarely see in the media of police really going after people? You see the broken glass, but what about the other images that I was really surprised to see yesterday at the Independent Media Center that you showed at your news conference? CNN was there, Washington Post was there, a lot of big reporters were there from the corporate media. And I think they might have been surprised as well, because this is not what flashes on the TV screen very much.
It's truly not. And I was able to be moderating the discussion, and so I was looking at the faces of folks from CNN, New York Times, And they were clearly affected by the images that they were seeing. So I do think it has to do with the perspective. As you mentioned earlier, it's not just the technology, it's who's making the media, what perspectives they're bringing, and whose stories are getting out. I think it's very vital that we have citizen-based media in these perspectives.
Well, I have to say I saw the power of the media yesterday with all of the grassroots video people as well as the corporate media when they showed up at a site when the police were about to attack. They donned their gas masks. They had their tear gas canisters and pepper spray. They had their police batons. They were about to move in, but there were scores of video cameras between the people and the police, and that made them pause for a minute, enough time where the police chief then came in and they said, take off the gas masks, and that ended that confrontation. For just a minute before we go to our break, we're going to Zach Wolf, who's on the street, legal observer. Zach, what are you looking at right now?
I am at the corner of 17th and M. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Okay, there's a lot of noise here. Some folks, again, were penned in by police on a corner, including one of our legal observers, and are being arrested right now. This again, is one of those things where they don't allow people to police.
We're having trouble hearing you. You're breaking up. I understand there have been, what, several hundred arrests?
I think there's been, yeah, a couple hundred so far today. Thanks.
Well, we're going to go back.
And we've had one of our legal observers is being arrested right now.
We're going to go back to the site at the end of the program. We thank you for being with us again. The protests continue for a second day to try to close down or at least have an effect on the meetings of the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. There's no question an effect has been had because Washington, D.C. is pretty much closed down. Even today, federal workers were given the day off. And I know people at the World Bank and the IMF, though they aren't officially given the day off, they don't have to come in. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! I want to thank Jeff Perlstein and Sherry Herndon for joining us, co-founders of the Independent Media Center. If people want to go to the web and see what you have to offer.
Yeah, they should check out www.indymedia.org, and that's IndyMedia.org.
Thank you very much. We'll be back in a minute. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman.
Those polar bears now, who really cares now? They're breeding gender-bending babies who won't be breeding none, 'cause PCBs, yeah, are in the seas, yeah. We like to think that there's a little piece of us in everyone, 'cause we're Monsanto. That's right, Monsanto. We're turning Satan into Santa by giving kiddies cancer coming through now. We're changing you now. The Mother Nature Terminators of food and health and hope. That DDT man, don't let on me, man. 'Cause we had all these creepy crawlies falling on the food we grew. Was a revolution,
very solution.
It's just a shame that what we sprayed on made the turnip stumps in two. Let me remind you about Indochina. Then call me dominoes were falling, so they sprayed them into hell.
Get peasant farmers, orange pajamas.
We made their jungle cover wither, then we withered
them as well.
'Cause we're Monsanto, that's right, Monsanto. We're turning Satan into Santa by giving kiddies cancer
coming through now. We're changing you now. The Mother Nature Terminators of food and health and hope.
It's not our fault.
Duty to
span, an eco-friendly line and redesign, and DNA genetic eyes on that far horizon, where everything alive is privatized and every seed obeyed. We got the soya, we got the lawyers, the politicians in our pockets, all the way to president, the press and TV, to guarantee the cooperation of your nation in our new experiment. You did not choose it, but you'll have to use it. We'll get our Roundup Ready fingerprint in every pie you eat with a bit blatant, be a bit more blatant. Tell the corporation's domination of your global be complete. Mr. Monsanto, Monster Mutanto, we're turning Satan into Santa. Give everybody cancer coming through now. We're changing you now. The Mother Nature Terminators, Hell on Earth creators, gene manipulators, biotech dictators. The future's gone.
Seize the Day. They're the group that sang yesterday at the first day of the protests of the IMF and the World Bank. And we're joined by the group right now, Shannon Smy and Theo Simon. Well, if we were in Britain right now, we could be sued for playing that song on a radio station. Food and health and hope. That's the theme of what, Monsanto?
That's Monsanto's corporate slogan, Food and Health and Hope. They've actually patented that slogan. We made that song and released it on the internet on April the 1st last year in the hopes that they'd sue us so that we could take it to court and we could show that everything we say in that song is true about that corporation's history.
Well, first of all, I think that you should, everyone should get a copy of that song and send it to the New Yorker for the profile they did on the CEO of Monsanto last week. I think what you did in the song should have been included instead. Seize the Day, a grassroots activist band whose music is inspired by the action they and others are taking to change the world. In fact, they are serious activists in Britain. Can you tell us, Shannon Smy, what you have done in Britain about biotechnology?
Well, obviously, I started by informing myself of the issues. The more I found out, the more concerned I became. And it got to the point where no one could convince me of the safety of these foods. And I realized that the PR companies for the biotech giants were basically telling us, or were telling them, that whatever they did, they shouldn't talk about the issues of health or the environment with any of us, because they'd lose. We would all know that what they were saying wasn't true. So myself and four others went to the roof of a PR company in Britain, Monsanto's PR company, and took our clothes off and held up a banner saying end the genetics cover-up, which got lots of media coverage. And then I got involved in a labelling campaign started by Greenpeace and Friends of the Earth. And we went into supermarkets around the country and put on our own stickers saying this food contains genetically modified food, because we can't get labelling. We have now, but your country still doesn't have it.
Meaning that the food would say it's genetically modified.
Yeah, it does in Europe now, but it still doesn't in America. And I was arrested for doing that. And after a six-month legal battle, I actually won. They'd arrested me for intent to cause anxiety or alarm. and I won.
Intent to cause anxiety.
Yeah. Well, I think, obviously, that genetically modified foods, the whole issue around them, is making me very anxious.
Did you also take food off the shelf of grocery stores?
Yes, and a little bit later along the line, another small group of us decided that we were going to go in and get the genetically modified foods off the shelves accountably. We told the supermarket we were doing it. We handed in a list of everything we were taking, and we took it down the police station and said, this food is contaminated. We think it's bad for our health. We think it's dangerous. We think it's dangerous for the environment. Please do something about it. They refused to take it. And then we eventually took it to the Ministry of Agriculture, Fisheries and Foods in London, and they eventually took it, although they didn't want to. And 2 days later, the supermarket that we'd taken it out of went GE-free in their own brand.
Meaning genetically engineered food free.
Yeah, they took it out of their own brand 2 days after that action.
Whoa.
They didn't want everybody going into the supermarkets and taking their foods off the shelf, I guess.
Shannon Smy, she's one of the group Seize the Day. Again, they played yesterday on the Ellipse in Washington, D.C. Theo Simon, you're the other part of this group, this singing duo, and you're a backup band. Can you talk about your work in Britain?
Yeah, I got involved the same time as Shannon, and there was about 60 activists who met together in Britain and decided about 3 years ago that we needed to do something to get these issues thought about. And at the time, it seemed like an uphill struggle, and we knew we were going to have to work hard. We first occupied Monsanto's headquarters in Britain for a day to try and highlight what was going on. And then we realized that we actually had to deal with the crops which were being planted in Britain. In Britain, they don't have commercial planting of genetically engineered crops like you do here, but they have what they call test sites, and those sites are getting bigger and bigger each year until one day they're going to say it's okay to plant commercially. So in order to prevent those sites spreading their pollen, which is genetically mutated, spreading that pollen to other plants and therefore causing genetic pollution of all the plants in Britain, we decided we had to pull up those crops. So what we did was, in one community where genetically engineered maize had been planted next to an organic farm where sweet corn was being grown, that farmer was going to lose his livelihood because his crop would no longer be classified as organic if it had GM pollen in it. So the community tried to take it to court, the farmer went to court, he tried to stop it being planted, we couldn't stop it. So in the end, the people of that community went out and we pulled up that crop. And about 50 people went, we pulled up the entire crop, and then 12 of us were arrested. Eventually, when it came to trial in Britain, the day of the trial, there was such support for the people who pulled up that crop that the prosecution service announced they wouldn't be in the public interest to carry on with the trial, because they knew that if it went before a jury in Britain at that time, they would have lost, and people would have been outraged to hear more about GM crops. So they effectively have denied us the opportunity so far to put this technology on trial.
Now, we weren't going to play the whole song, Food and Health and Hope, but then we couldn't resist, and we weren't going to play a second song, but I just have to hear it. So let's go to Transgenic Honey. This is Seize the Day.
I used to feel safe here. These are the flowers and the trees I grew up with. But now as I'm walking through these fields I have known, I'm wondering which way the wind has blown. Something's changed. Something strange you rearranged, and I don't remember asking you. Something's changed, something strange you rearranged, and I don't remember you asking me. In a world that has intelligence so high, I'm wondering
Transgenic Honey by Seize the Day. We're joined by two of the singers, Shannon Smy and Theo Simon from Britain. They were at the IMF World Bank rally, the anti-International Monetary Fund and World Bank rally yesterday on the Ellipse. Theo Simon, what's the connection?
The connection is, first of all, the globalization of the market of capital now is also the globalization of corporate control of the food supply. And the role the IMF plays in that is as an active promoter of that. They are currently setting up a network of so-called independent research centers across the world, which they say are going to help the poor. And those research centers are dedicated to and funded for the purpose of developing biotechnology and persuading and cajoling farmers in the third world under things like structural readjustment programs to embrace biotech seeds, to take on genetically engineered food and crops. Now, what that means is that those farmers then become under the control of the corporations who patent and control those seeds and control all the inputs. It's part of the whole process of eradicating independent agriculture on this planet, here in America, over in India, in Britain, and across the world. And it's part of that same nexus of support for the corporations, which is coming from groups like the IMF, coming from the US government, who currently are planning to spend $5 billion on promoting biotech in the world. And it's interesting, you know, the IMF claim that they're helping the world's poor. Between 1993 and 1995, the US Treasury estimates that they channeled $5 billion to US firms. And that included Cargill, the big seed and food corporation, who actually had made $56 billion in 96. So they didn't need aid. They weren't a poor company. The IMF are here to encourage and support the globalization of corporate power.
Shannon Smy, with you taking off genetically engineered food from the shelves, what's your answer to those who say this has been going on for thousands of years, kind of crossbreeding, making of products like yogurt, and explain why they say that is genetically engineered?
It's exactly what I thought it. That's what I was told when I first found out about genetic engineering. This is just exactly the same as what we've been doing for thousands of years. And everything that I found out has shown me that we have never crossed species barriers before. We're putting bits of bacteria, well, I'm not, but they are. They're putting bits of bacteria from one species, and they're taking it and they're putting it into tomatoes, and we have no idea what the consequences of those actions are going to be.
We're talking to Shannon Smy and Theo Simon. Seize the Day. Is it true that you could be sued in Britain if this were played on a radio? Do you get much play?
We don't. We've had little bits of play, but they have to edit out anything which alleges that Monsanto's products have caused cancer throughout the planet, not only through Agent Orange, through dioxins, through PCBs. And I have to warn American listeners and consumers, through aspartame, which is here so popular, which came from the Pentagon's chemical warfare program and has been shown to cause tumors and so on. So there's any number of things, but if you're listening, Monsanto, we would love to be sued. We really would.
I personally wouldn't. It's his mission, not mine.
Well, if people want to get a hold of Seize the Day, food and health and hope, where can they call or go on the web?
They need to contact us via our website, which is www.seizetheday.org.
That's www.seizetheday.org. And if you need more information,
If you want to find out more about this campaign, then www.purefood.org is a really good place to start.
Thank you very much, Shannon Smy and Theo Simon, as we go out with your headliner, Food and Health and Hope. And we'll be back tomorrow with more Sounds of the Streets of the Mobilization for Global Justice. Democracy Now! Is produced by Maria Carrion and David Love. Our technical director, Errol Maitland, is still recuperating from an attack on him by police 2 weeks ago. He is out of intensive care. Joe Gill is our engineer here at the Pacifica Station WPFW, and thanks to Bob Daughtry and Vaughn Patton. From the studios of WPFW, I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for listening.
We're changing you now. The Mother Nature Terminators of food and health and hope. That DDT man, don't let on me, man. Cause we had all these creepy crawlies falling on the food we grew. It was a revolutionary solution. It's just a shame that what we sprayed on made to turn it toxic too. Let me remind you about Indochina. Then call me dominoes were falling, so they sprayed them into hell. Hugging peasant farmers, orange pajamas.